six students per class. Give us a call, 91-133-5831. Learn English with Vaughn via video conference classes. Sign up now.
Hello, I'm your Vaughn telephone class teacher. How are you doing?
¿Quieres que un profesor Vaughan llame a tus trabajadores? Con horarios flexibles y la posibilidad de cancelar o reservar cualquier sesión dentro de la misma semana. Elige el tema de conversación que tú quieras. Una conversación telefónica con un angloparlante con el ingrediente clave del método Vaughan para empresas. Consulta condiciones en el 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Are you ready to start the class?
¿Quieres apuntarte a un curso de inglés y no sabes cuál escoger? ¿Por qué no probar nuestro curso trimestral de Vaughan? Son solo 3 meses, no pierdes nada y te aseguramos que vas a ganar mucho. 3 meses en los que podrás ver cuál es tu nivel real de inglés. 3 meses en los que trabajarás tu listening and speaking en todo momento. 3 meses en los que subirás ese nivel tanto que, pues, que querrás otros 3 meses y otros 3. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Vaughan.
Esta es La Hora Extra, con Richard Vaughan.
Hello and welcome to the Extra Hour, Tuesday's edition. Today is Tuesday, the 20th of October, and this is the Extra Hour, which means it's another hour simply for you to improve your English. To improve your English by listening. And definitely, I recommend that you repeat aloud any form or any vocabulary or any type of sentence structure that you're not very familiar with or that you don't personally use. You say, you know, Richard used a type of sentence. He uses it often, and I never use it. And so you practice that sentence, if you understand the concept of the sentence. All right. As usual, ask me some interesting questions, and I'll try to give you some interesting answers. But if the questions aren't interesting, it's not easy to give interesting answers. So, shoot, I'm waiting for a question. All right, Richard, where's the flattest terrain you've ever seen? What? Where's the flattest terrain you've ever seen? I've seen flat terrain. Terreno, plano. Flat terrain. I've seen flat terrain many places. But I would say the two places I recall, ¿eso es llamar de nuevo? No. To recall means to remember. It means the same thing, to remember. I remember. Let's see. The two places that I recall that really was noticeably flat, like a tabletop. Like a what? Like a tabletop. Ah, como una superficie una mesa. Yeah, but we say top. The tabletop. The surface of a table, yes. The surface of a table is the tabletop. Yes. So a tabletop, as flat as a tabletop, there are two places I specifically remember. Now, there are many places on this planet, of course. But the two places I remember the most are traveling from Alcázar de San Juan to Tomelloso in Spain, in plena La Mancha, in the middle of La Mancha. And it was as flat as a pancake, man, as flat as a tabletop. All right. Más plano que un panqueque? as flat as a pancake. As flat as a tabletop. It was an interesting drive because it reminded me of Texas in some places. But the second place that I know is really just flat, is driving from Houston to Corpus Christi, Texas, along the near the Texas coast, not on the coast. The coast is too ragged, too jagged for a highway along the coast. It's impossible in Texas to build a road bordering the water. You can't do it. It's just the coastline is too jagged. How do you say jagged in Spanish? I don't know. It's too jagged. Too ragged is another way. They mean the same thing. Ragged means andrajoso, harapo, de harapos, but it also means the opposite of smooth and straight. First, let's look up jagged. Jagged. Dentado, cerrado, escarpado, abrupto, punto, con picos. Bueno, if it's vertical, it's jagged, yeah. The Sierra Nina Ronda is very jagged. The coastline along Texas is very jagged. Now, ragged, the same but with an R. Arrepiento andrajoso, desigual, irregular. Ahí está, ragged. And you would probably need 20,000 miles of road to successfully build a road bordering the water on the Texas Gulf Coast. So, driving from Houston to Corpus Christi, you drive about 10 kilometers in the interior, but it's as flat as a pancake. Una vega costera. It's the coastal plain. Very good for cotton, and very good for sorghum, and very good for other crops. Crops on agricultural products. Cultivos. Other crops. So, those are the flats, but there are other flats. If you go to Salar de Uyuni in Bolivia, of course it's a salt flat. The salt flats. And it's as flat as physically possible. It's as flat as physically, but I've never been there. And besides, it's very, very, it's about 4,000 meters. I don't know. Salar de Uyuni. I spoke about that about a month ago. But it's very, very high. And so I don't think I'll go there. Here it says, un viaje a Bolivia no puede estar completo sin una excursión al Salar de Uyuni. Es sencillamente increíble. All right. But the problem is it's very high. It's very, very high. Let me see if I can find the elevation above sea level of this Salar de Uyuni. It's very big. It's flat as a pancake. As flat as a pancake. The flattest, one of the flattest places on the planet. But it's very, very high. I can't find reference to the height, to the altitude above sea level. Yes, but I can find it. Elevación, you say that? Sobre nivel de mar? Let me see if I can find it. Salar de Uyuni. I can't find the elevation. I found it last month, and I can't find it this month. All right. But it's about 4,000 meters above sea level. So it's pretty high to go up there. You'll have trouble breathing, and you'll probably get a headache and maybe become sick. Some people suffer altitude sickness, but I can't find the elevation. I wish I could. Let's see. It's 400. It's 140 kilometers long. Okay, dude. All right, good. But give me the height. But I can't find it. So sorry, Charlie. But I just can't find it. That's your homework. Okay. The elevation of the Salar de Uyuni, but it's very, very flat. So your question, if I remember right, your question is, where is the flattest terrain I have ever seen? Personally, the flattest terrain I remember seeing, that I recall seeing, is in southeast Texas along the Gulf Coast. That area in La Mancha, in the province of Ciudad Real, driving from Alcácer de San Juan to Tomelloso. It's very, very flat. All of that area is flat, La Mancha, but that is as flat as a tabletop. More questions. I'm ready for more. Okay, Richard, would you rather be a film producer or a film director? Oh, that's easy. I'd rather be a film director. Well, you know, it depends on your definition of producer. A film producer, who is really the financier and everything, can make a lot of money. If the film is successful, of course. That's almost like the film studio, the movie studio, MGM, Warner Brothers, Columbia, Paramount, United Artists. They make a lot of money. But they can lose a lot of money if they have a bad year with bad movies. And right now in the coronavirus, it's complicated because the movie theaters are closed. So the movie producers, the film companies have to find alternative ways to sell their wares, vender su mercancía, o sea, películas, to sell their movies. But in any case, I would rather be a film director than a producer because it's two things. Number one, it's more creative. And number two, it's less risky because they pay you. I mean, you're paid. The production company, the studio pays the director within the budget. The producer has to worry about all the budget, about all of the logistics that ready, that everybody has, you know, the food is available on the set. For example, if they have to go and film, imagine they need to go and film in Almeria, a spaghetti western. Well, the producer has to make sure that there's enough water and food for 300 people out there, the camera crew. Se dice crew, C-R-E-W, que significa tripulación de barco, de avión. The crew, the cabin crew, the crew. But crew, I'm losing my voice. True, crew is also used for el equipo de trabajo en una película. The camera crew, the light crew, the sound crew. And so that's a lot of work for a producer. A lot of work. I knew a woman. She died about 10 years ago. And she was a producer. She worked in production, and she was always very nervous about... She was a nervous person by nature because I think her job made her hypersensitive to little details, this and that. So I don't think I would like to be a film producer, although I think if a film producer enjoys a series of successful films, he or she ends up earning more than a film director. Unless, of course, the director is Steven Spielberg or some director who is famous and highly regarded and who earns a lot of money for every film he directs. But many times nowadays, film directors are call the shots. And the producers and even the film studio follows the lead set by the film director. If Steven Spielberg wants to make a movie about the city of Madrid, probably the producers and the financiers and everybody will go along with it and not question Steven Spielberg. Because I don't know how many of Spielberg's movies have been a flop. How many of Spielberg's films have flopped? All right. All 32 Spielberg movies ranked, clasificados, from worst to best. I don't know if the criteria here. The worst is Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. All right. So, okay, that was the worst. All right. The second worst, but you see, I don't know if it was in the amount of money the movie made or simply in the critical assessment of the movie. The second worst is The Lost World, Jurassic Park. The third worst is AI, Artificial Intelligence. And then Amistad, The Color Purple, Hook. A lot of very interesting movies, by the way, a few. Let's see, Minority Report. Yes, my daughter, when she was 21 or 22, saw Minority, and she said, "You have to see it." And I saw it, and I wasn't convinced with Tom Cruise in a Minority Report. Lincoln, it's ranked number 18, so it's not one of his best. I didn't go to see Lincoln because I didn't agree with the approach Spielberg used for presenting Abraham Lincoln, although I have heard that the acting by the Irish actor, whose name I can't remember right now, was outstanding. But I didn't want to watch Lincoln in the movie about the Emancipation Proclamation. That, for me, was not the most important element in Lincoln's life. Let's see, the top 10, according to this, the top 10 are Empire in the Sun, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Indiana Jones y el Templo Maldito, the Temple of Doom. I don't agree with that. Saving Private Ryan. Really, the only good, interesting thing about Saving Private Ryan was the realistic opening, the landing at Omaha Beach in Normandy. Duel. I haven't seen Duel. I haven't even heard of it. Ah, yes. I saw that, of course. That was a black and white movie before Spielberg became famous. Yes, it was a made-for-television movie in 1971. Yeah, and it's good, eh? Duel. Duel is duelo. Duelo entre un camión y un conductor de coche. It's good. Number five is Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I agree. Number four is E.T. Number three is Schindler's List. Number two is Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I don't agree with that. But it was an interesting movie. And number one is Jaws. I don't agree with that either. Jaws was good. For me, the best is Raiders of the Lost Ark. But there's one they didn't include in the list. They didn't include a very funny, interesting movie called Sugarland Express. And yes, they did. Number 24. All right. I thought that was very good. Sugarland, because Sugarland is a town just outside of Houston, and it's based on a true story with Goldie Hawn, a very funny actress, and it's a really good movie, Sugarland Express. Spielberg could be considered maybe the greatest post World War II director. I don't know, but if I had to choose, if I would rather be a film producer or a film director, I would rather be a film director, of course. Would you rather work in film or in theater? Would you rather be a theater director or a film director? I think I would rather be a film director. Because as a theater director, you direct the theater during the rehearsals. But after that, you don't really direct. You don't. I mean, it's over. Then the theater, the play, can go on for 5 years on Broadway, on the West End, or wherever. But the director, I don't think the director is very much involved after that, so you need to go on and direct a new one. More questions. Yeah, more questions. I like your questions today. Come on. All right. How often do people do jury duty in the U.S.? I don't really know. I've never done jury duty. My mother did jury duty. I know that in the UK, in England and Wales, during a person's lifetime, the likelihood that they will be called to do jury duty is about 35%. That percentage is higher in Scotland because the population is less. And in Scotland, the juries are 15 people, not 12. I don't know why. What is the population of Scotland, by the way? Scotland. The population of Scotland. Let's see. Scotland. The Scottish people. Scotia. Scotland. Population. According to Wikipedia, the population is, let's see. 5.4 million people. Five and a half million people. So, and it's a very interesting country, because it's a country. It's part of the Reino Unido. So it's un reino. Bueno, es un reino. Fue un reino. Until, I don't know, I think maybe until the Stuarts. Because before, when Queen Elizabeth I was queen, she was queen of England. She wasn't queen of Scotland. Mary was queen of Scotland. Mary, queen of Scots. And she was executed by Elizabeth. And her son, James, took over as James VI of Scotland. And then when Elizabeth I died in 1603, paradoxically, the heir to the throne finally was James VI of Scotland. So he became simultaneously James I of Great Britain, of England, and Wales. And so maybe at that point was the point in which the Scotland and England were not clearly separated, but in terms of royal houses in the line of royal succession. Who knows? But you're looking at me strange. I don't think you understood my questions before that. Because you asked a question. How often do people do jury duty in the U.S.? And I said, I don't know. I said that my mother did jury duty once, but I've never done jury duty. And you don't understand what I'm talking about. All right. In the Anglo-Saxon world, Great Britain, Ireland, I don't know, but Ireland is Celtic. The United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia. The legal system is called the common law, derecho común. Whereas in continental Europe, it's what they call derecho civil, civil law. And they're quite different in many ways. One of the ways is that common law is based much, much more than civil law on the concept of a jury, un jurado de ciudadanos. Usually 12 people, but as I just said, in Scotland, it's 15. All right. And you've seen, of course, everybody who's listening to me now is very familiar with the American juries because it's so common in American movies. How many movies have you seen in which an attorney, a lawyer, is standing in front of the jury, speaking to them, trying to sway their opinion, to sway, hacer oscilar su opinión de un lado a otro, to sway, como way, which way, con ese delante, sway means to influence, in this case, their opinion. S-W-A-Y, sway, mecerse, balancearse, oscilar, influir, influenciar, persuadir, mover. O sea, sway. Si tienes un rulot enganchado a tu coche y vas y no está bien enganchado, puede empezar a oscilar de un lado a otro y es peligroso. That's called sway. It's very dangerous for trailers that you're pulling with your car. And so the hitch, el enganche, the hitch between the car has a sway control device. Un dispositivo para controlar la oscilación. De roulotte. So, that's a sway. Now, we use it figuratively. To sway the opinion of people means to try to influence and move their opinion in one direction or in the other. And that's what the prosecuting attorney or the defense attorney do in the courtroom, la sala de juicios, in the courtroom. In British, you would probably, I don't know what they call a prosecuting attorney. Now, the defense attorney, I think, is usually called the barrister. The barrister who defends the, I don't really know. How do you say prosecuting attorney in British English? Maybe we can find out. Prosecuting attorney. Meaning, definition and meaning. This is in United States law. It's an officer in a judicial district appointed to conduct criminal prosecutions on behalf of the state and the people. These attorneys are voted. They win election. You see, el fiscal del distrito, you hear this on the American movies. That's called the district attorney. And the district attorney is, in essence, the prosecuting attorney. Now, the word attorney doesn't mean fiscal. The word prosecuting attorney, yes, el fiscal. Or district attorney, or assistant DA, district attorney. But the defense attorney is el abogado de la defensa. Mi defensor, my defense attorney. And so the word attorney means abogado. There's no difference, really, between lawyer and attorney. If you want to say the word abogado in English, I recommend you say lawyer. And with this interesting moment, I'll come back and talk maybe more about this after the break.
Ahora, desde tu casa, una clase Vaughan. Por videoconferencia, infórmate llamando al 91-133-5833. Infórmate en grupovaughan.com.
Lo que más miedo le da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso, Vaughan ha desarrollado sus clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Vaughan 100%.
Infórmate en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91-133-5833.
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher.
¿Quieres tener un profesor Vaughan? ¿Quieres tener toda la intensidad de una clase Vaughan desde casa? Te lo ponemos muy fácil. Clases Vaughan a través de videoconferencia. Una de las modalidades cada vez más demandada. Curso de inglés trimestral por videoconferencia. No importa dónde te encuentres. Con las clases a través de videoconferencia, tendrás tu clase Vaughan con un ritmo de clase brutal. Nunca te vas a aburrir. Nunca vas a perder la concentración. Pruébalo, dinamismo e intensidad. Llama al 91-133-5833. 91-133-5833. Eso si estás en Madrid, porque en Barcelona puedes llamar al 93-339-8687. 93-339-8687. Haz una pausa y disfruta, mejorando, aprendiendo con tu curso trimestral por videoconferencia. Con todo el dinamismo e intensidad de una clase Vaughan en una plataforma rápida y de fácil instalación. Por fin llega tu mejor momento del día. Cursos trimestrales por videoconferencia. Haz tu reserva en el 91-133-5833. 91-133-5833.
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher. How are you doing?
¿Quieres que un profesor Vaughan llame a tus trabajadores con horarios flexibles y la posibilidad de cancelar o reservar cualquier sesión dentro de la misma semana? Elige el tema de conversación que tú quieras. Una conversación telefónica con un angloparlante con el ingrediente clave del método Vaughan para empresas. Consulta condiciones en el 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Are you ready to start the class?
Don Quijote y Sancho Panza, Cleopatra y Marco Antonio, Adán y Eva, Romeo y Julieta, Vaughan y Disney. ¿Eh?
Sí, ya lo has oído. Vaughan y Disney siguen colaborando para que tus hijos aprendan inglés mientras se divierten. La magia de Disney con la calidad de Vaughan. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Prueba el método Vaughan con nuestro curso trimestral. Elige entre nuestra modalidad presencial o por videoconferencia. Y el resto, déjanoslo a nosotros. 3 meses de listening y speaking con los mejores profesores del mercado. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Vaughan.
Con el curso online de Vaughan sacarás el inglés que llevas dentro. Adaptado a tus horarios, flexible y con todos los contenidos del método Vaughan. Y con nuestros profesores siempre disponibles. Contrátalo ahora con toda comodidad. Entra en curso online en grupovaughan.com. Haz clic en curso online en grupovaughan.com.
Por fin puedes disparar tu carrera profesional sin salir de casa. Máster en inglés profesional de Vaughan. Ahora, desde tu casa. Infórmate en grupovaughan.com.
La Hora Extra con Richard Vaughan.
And welcome back. Okay, our second half hour of the extra hour, today's Tuesday edition. Are you ready? Let's go. More questions. Richard, how often do people do jury duty in the U.S.? You asked me that question in the last half hour. Yes, but you didn't finish answering it. Well, I said I don't know. Jury duty. Jury duty es la obligación de formar parte un jurado en los tribunales. Now, it's mandatory in the United States. Everywhere, in every country that is based on common law, derecho común, you know, derecho civil, jury duty is a possibility. And when the authorities, local or county authorities, contact you and request that you do jury duty, you can't say no. And jury duty is usually about 2 weeks, and it's full time. So you miss jury duty. Oh, excuse me, you miss your job. You can't work. You have to go, and you can't say no. You must have, well, if you have a valid excuse, for example, soy ciego y sordo, you know, I'm blind and deaf, all right, well, they will not require you to do it. If you say my wife is very, very ill and she's disabled and I have to take care of her, it's very likely the judge, el juez, will allow you not to do jury duty. But unless you have a very strong excuse, you can't get out of it. You can't get out of it. Salir de ello, huir de ello, de la responsabilidad. You can't get out of the responsibility and you have to go. And your employer, if you're working for a company, your employer must continue paying you your salary during those 2 weeks, minus the amount that you're paid by the local government or the county government or whatever, or the state government. And so it's part of life in the United States and in Great Britain as well. I read that in England and in England and Wales, during a person's lifetime, there's about a 35% chance that that person will be called for jury duty. And you have to sit and listen for several hours every day, the proceedings in a trial. It could be a murder trial. It could be a theft, it could be armed robbery, or it could be white-collar crime. Excuse me? White-collar crime. What's white-collar crime? Delitos de cuello blanco. ¿Y eso qué es? What's that? All right. The classical differentiation, nowadays no, but the classical, well, I don't think so now. The classical differentiation between empleados de oficina y operarios de mono azul, obreros, la clase obrera y la clase oficinista, digamos, was white collar and blue collar. White collar workers, trabajadores de cuello blanco, normally con corbata, with a tie, etc. And blue-collar workers, de mono de trabajador, mono azul. And that's blue-collar worker, white-collar worker. Blue-collar wages, white-collar salaries. It's interesting in when we talk of... This is classical economics, United States, and I think Great Britain as well. Usually we use... Well, we always use the word salary for white-collar workers, employees, a monthly salary. Whereas for blue-collar workers, it's weekly wages or semi-monthly wages. When I was working in as a teenager, I worked for a pizzeria. I was in worked in a pizzeria, and I was paid weekly, a weekly paycheck. Un cheque, un talón bancario. And I deposited, I had a bank account. And so it was wages. I earned my weekly wages. So during the, people who do jury duty, they have to listen to different types of legal proceedings. Por no decir trial. Trial is un proceso judicial. Trial, escrito trial. And they have to listen to these things. It could be white-collar crime. White-collar crime son hurtos, son delitos de desfalco, this type of thing, de cuello blanco, where the chairman of the company is stealing money or the treasurer is stealing money from the company. That's white-collar crime. The word crime in English means delitos, crime. Criminal proceedings, son procedimientos contra el delito. Criminal. Criminal law is not about murder. The problem in Spanish, crimen, cometer un crimen, se entiende homicidio. It's a homicide. But not in English. To commit a crime is to drive faster than the speed limit on the highway. You're committing a crime. I've committed many crimes in my life, but I didn't get caught. Driving faster than the speed limit, but nobody caught me. Well, they took photographs of me and occasionally, I think I pay. Now, no. It's been a long time since I have had to pay a fine. But about 10 years ago, I think on the average, I paid maybe 200, 300 euros a year, maximum. Not much. Not much. I'm okay. I've lost a few points on my driver's license, but I think I still have 12 points or something. I don't know. I've never been in danger of losing my driver's license. But don't tell anybody, but I've gotten away with driving faster than the speed limit. Jury duty, jury, the jury, 12 members of the jury. Yes, there was a very famous movie and play. Doce Hombres Sin Piedad. It was brought to Spain in the early 1970s. And they made a film in Spain based on that. It was very good. I remember the actors. But, you know, it must be strange for the Spanish audience to watch a Spanish movie with a jury because they don't juries exist here. Juries is part of the... But you don't hear much about them. I don't really know how much. My good friend Pedro explained it about a year ago. A person who's a regular listener, but I don't remember the details of his explanation. Sorry, Pedro. More questions. Come on, more questions. We still have a lot of time. We have plenty of time for more questions. Okay, Richard, do you like clams? Yeah. Yes, I do. Do you? Yeah. Do you like clams? Clams. Si me gustan las almejas. Comer almejas. Yes, I like clams, but in general I do. It depends on how they prepare them, of course. they're almejas a la marinera. You know, there are different types of ways of serving clams. And my favorite, well, I remember one restaurant, Edelweiss, a German restaurant that used to be, it's no longer there. It was an institution. It was a fantastic restaurant. Just behind Las Cortes, El Parlament, the Spanish Parliament in Madrid. Excellent restaurant. But then, starting maybe in 1990, it began to decline. Slowly, very slowly. It was still good, but it began a very slow decline. And then finally, I think about 10 years ago, it started a clear decline, and then it disappeared. I don't think it's there anymore. There is a restaurant there, but I don't think it's Edelweiss. But I'm not sure. It's been a long time since I was walking behind the Cortes. And I remember that, I forgot why I'm talking about that restaurant. Ah, the clams. The almejas a la marinera were the best I've eaten in my life, with a big difference over number two. But it wasn't the clams. It was the sauce. The sauce. And they brought out this big recipient with clams and the sauce. And the sauce was so good that can you bring me a spoon? And I ate it like a soup. So it was the sauce. And I never found out, and I've eaten, you know, the clams a la marinera many, many times in Spain, maybe 30 times. Nothing came close to that sauce. The sauce is usually good on all of them, but this one was just scandalously good. But I like clams. I like clam chowder, which you don't know. Probably you've never heard of it. Clam chowder is una crema de almejas a lo bostoniano, especially in Boston. The city of Boston is famous for clam chowder. And in Spain, you don't have it. Although I imagine that you can find, my wife knows how to make it because I like it very much, clam chowder. Se llama clam chowder a cualquiera de los varios tipos de chowder, sopa espesada, que contiene almejas y caldo. All right. It's good. It's really, really good. And it's a pity that in Spain you can't find clam. Well, maybe you can find it. I don't know if we can find clam chowder in Madrid, maybe. Let me see. Clam chowder in Madrid. If I can find it, or in Spain. La mejor opción, sopa de almejas a domicilio. Okay, great. Clam chowder delivery in Madrid. Receta de clam chowder. Oh my God, I'm looking at a picture of clam chowder. It looks so good. And that's my favorite for clams. Clams. I prefer clam chowder over almejas a la marinera or similar. Although the Edelweiss was especially good. Clam chowder. You should import that here and start serving it. I mean, la buena mesa, you know, Spain is the gastronomy offering in Spain is very, very good. It's a pity that clam chowder is not part of it. All right. But I also like mussels. Mussels. Mussels no son músculos. Se pronuncia igual. But mussels are mejillones. I also like mussels. My favorite is just steamed mussels. Yes, al vapor. Yes, those are my favorite. I like it more than any other way of preparing mussels. And the best mussels I have eaten in my life were in Sisimbra. Sisimbra is a small fishing village and resort town just south of Lisbon, on the other side of the Tagus, not too far from Setúbal, Sisimbra. I don't know the population, but it's probably about 10,000 people. I really don't know. Si Simbra. And of course, the water is so cold in the Atlantic there. Si Simbra. Let's find out how big. Si Simbra. Oh, for years I've been saying it wrong. Si Simbra. Let's see. Villa Portuguesa, 49,000 habitantes. Wow, it's much bigger than I thought. I spent about 3 or 4 days in Si Simbra. It's very nice. The problem is the water is too cold in the Atlantic. I'm looking at a picture of Si Simbra, and it doesn't look like 49,000 people. Come on. It doesn't look like that, but it is 50,000 people. Si Simbra. And there I ate mejillones al vapor, but in a person's house. We bought them in the market. Well, we didn't buy, well, yes and no. We bought them in La Lonja, you know, down on the coast, down on the beach, in a special place. Took them and then made them, and those are the best I've eaten in my life. Barnacles also, I like barnacles very much. Barnacles is the English word for percebes. The problem is barnacles, I think, are a little bit expensive. And if you're going to eat barnacles, it's helpful to know how. There's a little trick on how to eat them without splattering the barnacle juice everywhere on yourself and on your friends. But I like barnacles very much as well. Barnacle, escrito, los percebes. The percebes, un percebe, los percebes. So I like barnacles as well. So yeah, yes, I like clams, I like mussels, I like barnacles. My favorite clams is clam chowder. Mussels, al vapor, steamed mussels. And barnacles, no, I don't, the way they serve barnacles. But Richard, have you eaten turkey lately? Turkey? No. Lately, no. I don't remember the last time I ate turkey. Maybe about 3 years ago or 4 years ago at Christmas to eat turkey. I like turkey. If it's not overcooked, turkey, pavo. Turkey can become dry. And so you need to be careful on not overcooking it. And of course, not undercooking it as well. Some people, including in my family, we have injected brandy into the turkey before cooking it. You take a syringe is una jeringa, jeringuilla. You take a syringe and you fill it with brandy, cognac or something, and then you inject it into different strategic points in the turkey, and it gives the turkey a nice flavor, soft, not too much, eh? But an interesting flavor of brandy. It's a bit like using brandy for cooking. A lot of people use brandy in the kitchen for cooking, or they use white wine or red wine sometimes for cooking, and it's usually very, very good. But I haven't eaten turkey lately. Yeah, I would like to. And I haven't eaten chicken the American style, Texas fried chicken. I miss that. It's delicious. Texas fried chicken. I like chicken in many different ways. When I came to Spain, I saw that people ate pollo asado. And many, many times I had medio pollo asado in the menu del día in the restaurants when I was a bachelor. When I was single, I ate a lot in the menu of the day restaurants run by families. And I always ordered medio pollo asado, and I liked it. I liked it. It was good. I prefer the Texas fried chicken, which is not Kentucky fried chicken. But I like Kentucky fried chicken as well. But I prefer the Texas style. And the Louisiana style, you start getting into Louisiana chicken that's a little bit more condimented, a little bit more spicy. Spicy. Spicy significa spice. Spice is especia. Las especias. Spices. And spicy means especiado o condimentado, spicy. The British use spicy to mean picante. The Americans usually don't. The Americans say spicy for algo muy especial, pero que no quema como pica, cabe como pica, like un pimiento padrón, so those that. So they're spicy. We say hot. We just use the word hot. So in the United States, hot has three meanings. Caluroso, I think the de mucho calor, it's very hot outside. Hot means caliente como quema. Wow, está muy caliente. It's very hot. Y luego picante, como pica. Porque es un calor. It's the same. It's you feel like your mouth is burning. And so, wow, this is really hot. And then a person says, fire hot or pepper hot? Fire hot or pepper hot. I grew up in Texas. And so I grew up in an area with a lot of Tex-Mex food. And so I have a high threshold for hot food. Excuse me, you have a high what? I have a high threshold for hot food. Comida picante, el picante. I don't understand threshold. Okay, threshold means umbral. Now, normally, well, 99% of the time when we say threshold, we're using the concept umbral en sentido figurado. Yeah, the threshold, el umbral de la ciencia. Tengo un alto umbral de aguante. A threshold. Now, el umbral de una puerta, the physical, we say the entrance hall, we have different, como el zaguán. we do say threshold physically for the wedding night. After the wedding takes place, well, then in the classical approach to wedding and the wedding night, the bride and the groom, los novios, the bride, la novia y el novio, the bride and the groom. Nunca se dice al revés, the groom and the bride. Nunca. We say the bride and the groom go off to a house, to a hotel, and classically, when the groom opens the door, he picks up the bride and carries her across the threshold. It's a symbolic moment that now she is his. Yes, okay, and so that's a classical hito, you would say, a milestone in marriage, is crossing the threshold. And so we use this word. That's the only time we really refer, I think, to threshold as a physical moment, crossing the entrance from the outside to the inside of a house or hotel room or whatever for the wedding night. Yes, on the honeymoon, the wedding night in Noche de Bodas. So that's the threshold. Now, I say, tengo un alto umbral de aguante para el picante. I have a high threshold because I grew up with this. And in the United States, if you go to a Mexican restaurant, not a fast food restaurant like Taco Bell. No, you go to a normal Mexican sit-down restaurant. The first thing they serve is chips and the hot sauce. And I just devour it. Sometimes really, really hot. Other times it's not. And I remember the first time I went to Mexico City. I remember there was a time when I was alone because I went with my good friend Bob Pearson, but he returned early, I think by plane. And I stayed for another week in Mexico City, and I was by myself. And I remember going to a restaurant, a very nice restaurant, by myself. I was alone. I was 20. Let's see, this was in the Christmas of 1972 to 73. No, from 1973 to 74. The Christmas of 73 to 74. And so I was 22. And I was alone in a big, very fancy restaurant in the center of Mexico City. And I ordered enchiladas, and they were so hot. I say I have a high threshold, but I mean, wow. And my mouth was just on fire. But I managed to finish it. It was good, but boy. But I remember seeing a family at a table, very near my table. And because I was alone, I had nothing to do but look at other people. And it was a family with the grandmother, and then the mother and father and the children. So it was a table of about six people. And I remember watching that grandmother taking a spoon and eating the la salsa picante a cucharadas from Ben. And it was hot, and she had a much higher threshold than I have. All right. So, more questions. We still have a minute. All right. Well, who played the role of Lawrence of Arabia in film? Peter O'Toole. Peter O'Toole became famous worldwide thanks to the movie Lawrence of Arabia. Before that, he was a good stage actor in London, but he wasn't famous. Nobody really knew who he was except the circles of people especially connected to theater. But after that, he was world famous. He did a very good job in that film, very interesting. But the director, British director David Lean, for me was the star of Lawrence of Arabia. The photography is just breathtaking. It's outstanding photography. And that's David Lean. But I don't have time to pursue the subject of David Lean because I have run out of time. It's all good things must come to an end, and this is the end of the program for today. I'll see you tomorrow in Richard Vaughn Live. Bye-bye.